Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 142, week 8 in the SEC, recorded Tuesday, October 20th, 2014. This week on the Roundtable, Shane Bailey, Britton Burton, and Nick Jones discuss the dominance of the SEC West with four teams in the top five, including Nick Saban's ability to deflect and redirect criticism and give the Alabama fans a dominating performance against A&M. Tennessee's and Florida's inept defenses lead to big wins by Ole Miss and Missouri. Arkansas is still looking for that surprise win in the SEC, but Georgia says not on their watch. And Kentucky's inability to stop the run led to a big win by an LSU team that has also found a defense. All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. I am your host, Shane Bailey, back for just another crazy week in the SEC. That's becoming a broke record, but it's been so much fun to watch these games every Saturday and something to really look forward to. But SEC Sports Roundtable is a fan podcast, I guess, is a way to put this, because we all have are a fan of a team. I'm a Kentucky guy, disappointing week this week. Got a couple Alabama guys on here joining me tonight. But we look at it from a fan's perspective, bring you some interesting commentary and thoughts about the games that happened last week or Saturday, the games that are going to happen this Saturday, and anything of news and note that happened in the SEC that we want to talk about. So it's pretty loose form flowing. But that's as rough of an outline as we can give you. We do it every week, especially through football and basketball season. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, anywhere you can get a podcast or a video version of this. We are on social media, on Twitter, Facebook. Just look up SEC SRT and find the way you want to communicate or interact with us and watch, listen, subscribe, like, however you want to say that. It's out there for you to do. We'd love for you to be engaged with that. But joining me tonight, from left to right, we have Britton Burton. Britton, welcome.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah, you guys are excited to be back. And also joining us from Bama Hammer, we have Nick. Welcome, Nick.
Shane, it's good to be back. You know, last time I was on here, we were talking about Alabama, you know, sitting pretty, you know, nice up there in the top five. And I skipped a week, and I don't know what happened. And now we're back in the top five, so... I don't know if that's good luck or bad luck or what.
You have to be on every week.
Yeah. Hey, so, if that's what it takes, we can make that happen.
Yeah. We might be recording at midnight due to a college man schedule, but, you know, us working.
I won't be on. That's
us working, man. We'll just have you insert. We'll have to insert your part. We'll have to figure out a way to do that if that's what it's going to take. But thanks for joining us, Nick. So glad you could join us. Like I said, it's just so crazy week in the SEC. I think if we go back to our previews, and I'll get your all's take on this as we kick this thing off, I think we were pretty spot on about some things. You know, by week 8 in the SEC, you're starting to see some patterns. You're starting to understand what teams you have out there. There's going to be some anomalies from week to week. Some things didn't go as everybody thought they would. That's still going to happen in the SEC. That's going to happen in every conference because you're in conference play. But you're starting to get an understanding of what these teams have and what they're made of. And, you know, when you look at it, we were right on a lot of things. We were still wrong. I wouldn't say wrong per se. I would say tepid. You know, we weren't buying into... We thought Ole Miss was going to be good. We thought Auburn was going to be good. We weren't buying into how good that some people thought they might be. You know, and they're proven to be very, very good. We were high on Mississippi State from the beginning. You know, I think everybody's calling it their dark horse. We were saying they had a chance to really compete for the SEC West. Now we're looking at the number one team in the country. We were unsure what Missouri could do in the east side after last year's season. We thought Florida was going to be down. We thought Kentucky was going to be better. I don't think we thought five wins better, but we thought that they were a program that they might not have very many more wins, but you were going to see a much better program on the field. Same thing with Tennessee. That was the same thoughts with them. kind of all of these things are kind of playing out. The ones we missed on was South Carolina. I don't think we thought that they were going to be in the position they were. But we were also pretty right on A&M. It's turning out, you know, that was that that South Carolina beat down at the very beginning of the season might not have been that Texas A&M was that good or South Carolina was that bad. You know, maybe a little mixture of both of those things, because A&M's not a bad program. They're still a great program. They've got a tough stretch ahead of them. You know, we were unsure on LSU. I'm trying to look, see if I've missed anybody. Unsure on LSU. We thought we had questions about their young defense, and that's kind of what's happened with them as this season's progressed. Their defense is learning and getting better. They're becoming an LSU we thought they had the potential to be. So they're coming into their own. Arkansas, they're kind of in that Tennessee-Kentucky basket where we thought they were going to be better. Their record might not show it. And then Vanderbilt, we missed on them. I don't think anybody thought they were going to be as bad as they were. And Georgia, you know, that defense is starting to come on its own and, you know, starting to really contend for the East. So that's my overview in 2 minutes of what we looked at, you know, basically anywhere from 2.5-3 months ago at these programs. What do you think of our assessment and what we were looking at and how we did, guys?
So I think the biggest miss was definitely South Carolina, and my guess would be we're not the only ones doing any kind of prognosticating for the upcoming season that missed on South Carolina. And that was a big miss. They are obviously just not very good. And I think the East in general, I think we all thought the East was not going to be as good. But for it to be as mediocre as it is, I think we're all probably a little bit surprised by that. And then to me, the biggest, most pleasant surprise, I think, especially considering how some of the fans responded to our thoughts on Texas A&M, is watching them become exactly what we said they were and not using the smoke and mirrors that made them look so good after beating what's turned out to be a bad South Carolina team. They've turned into exactly what we thought they were, which is a team that probably makes a bowl game, but you're looking at like a 7-win ceiling. And I personally am thoroughly enjoying it. And I enjoyed 59-0 last week too.
Yeah, and I think, Brittany, you make some good points. But going back and when Shane was talking, I was kind of thinking to myself, wow, we were actually right about a lot of things. But 2 weeks ago, even though I don't put too much credence in what we say, I mean, obviously, we're the source right now. I'm just kidding. But
We get paid a lot of money to say
exactly.
What
I mean, yeah. But seriously though, I take pride in being right. I mean, it's really bad when we're wrong. And you know, I was shaking in my boots that first week. You know, when we were getting all that Texas A&M hate mail, and we had just downed them. We were saying 7-8 wins, and then now it's becoming true. And I feel like there's other teams like that, like Arkansas. When Alabama played a close game with Arkansas, I was like, wow, Arkansas might win some games that they shouldn't, and they still might, but I think it's been a weird season in the fact that for us to have so many true predictions, maybe we didn't predict them the way that they're going right now, but it's been kind of a rocky season for us to have so many wins. Would we say that? I mean, that's what I'm coming out to. I mean, we knew MSU was going to be great or, you know, much better than they have been before, but, I mean, I don't think anybody in the nation predicted that going into week 9 they'd be the number one team. So it's fun to be right, but at the same time, I have to admit, I've been kind of worried down the stretch.
No, I think that's a good assessment. And I'm taking this opportunity to brag now because we look good this week.
Yeah. You know, it could all change next
week. Next week, so, you know, it could be a whole other ballgame. And that's what's happened in the SEC. You know, I looked at, as you all were talking, I'm looking at A&M's schedule the rest of the way. They have five games, 2 byes. You know, they got Alabama. No, I'm sorry. I was off a week. They've only got 4 more games. They're on bye this week. But they've got ULM after their bye, Auburn, Missouri, another bye, and then LSU. I'm going to say there's 2 losses still out there.
They're sitting at 4-3 right now?
5-3.
5-3, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Or is it on the road at LSU or is it at home?
It is home.
Okay.
To end the season on Thanksgiving.
Oh, really? LSU and A&M is a Thanksgiving game?
Yep.
Interesting. I mean, they're certainly going to be underdogs at Auburn. There's no doubt about that. The Missouri game, man, I don't know. I still don't. This is what we talked about at the beginning of the season. We don't know what to make of Missouri.
And they prove that every other, and they prove that to us every other week. We don't know what to expect from Missouri.
We're 8 weeks in, and I still don't know what to make of them. I mean, you just get pistol whipped by Georgia at home, and then come out and now, granted, Florida's kind of a dumpster fire right now, but just boat race them. You know, one quarter in, that game's over. I don't know, that one's probably a toss up. LSU is improving; they're looking better. There's a chance they're underdogs in all three of those games, unless we see some market improvement.
No, I don't think A&M's going to be an underdog because Missouri is at Texas A&M. It's at College Station.
So two of those three are at College Station.
Yeah. So, you know, that one, I'm almost going to give that one to A&M. I think there's a chance that they could lose LSU. You know, they could go 3-1. I mean, best case scenario for them is 3-1. And that gets them to 8 wins, right? 8-4. So we're looking at 7-5, 8-4, right about where we said they might be. The wins and losses at the beginning of the season just didn't happen the way we thought for that schedule on A&M.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about the week that was for A&M and just get things started with you two and talk about how great Alabama is and the Roll Tide this and the Roll Tide that. I mean, you know,
yada, 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 Roll Tide.
We heard hints of this, and we talked about this last season when Saban went on one of his little tirades, that is he more of a just a strategist? I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing when he went out there yelling at the media and the fans about that one-point win. He deflected everything away from his team so they could concentrate on what they needed to concentrate on, because after that, there was no talk about the mistakes that Alabama might have made at that game. And all of a sudden, they were able to bring everybody in, figure out what they needed to do, and execute basically flawlessly.
Go, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say that, you know, it's kind of like politics or anything else, but it's hard to say that, you know, Nick Saban knew exactly what he was doing, but every single time that
every
he goes
time.
On one of these tirades.
Every
I mean,
time.
Every single time. And it's not, I mean, he goes on something, he picks on the media every single week. I mean, that's just how his personality is. But when he discreetly points out something and, like you said, takes the blame away from his team and points it to something else, it's almost like Alabama shows up the next week, and it's incredible how he does that. And I've written a couple of articles about, you know, the motivational speakers that he has in, and I mean, he's just amazing at running the program, not necessarily even just coaching, but running the program. But, you know, just to point out, I mean, Alabama didn't have any penalties, you know, turnovers were limited. I mean, the things that have gone wrong for Alabama this entire season, you know, they only kicked one field goal and it actually went in for once, you know, and all these things, and limiting, you know, just not making these mental mistakes. And I know I wasn't on here, so I'm going to recap a little bit of the Arkansas game, but just watching Alabama, they looked lost, and they looked like they couldn't get out of the funk that they were in, and that's not something we've ever seen of an Alabama team under Nick Saban. I mean, even going back to his first couple years, I mean, I can't remember a time when Alabama's had, you know, multiple mental mistakes in a row, and, I mean, it was penalty after penalty. It was, if it wasn't a turnover, it was fumbling out of bounds or recovering your own turnover. And coming back in this fashion and beating a team, even though Texas A&M isn't where they are, but beating a team like Kevin Sumlin in a high-powered offense like they have this year, it was just great redemption. And, I mean, this was Alabama's most solid game against a spread team. And I mean, I haven't watched too much Texas A&M film this year, but they were throwing some stuff, and you know, Saban admitted this, some formations that Alabama didn't even know what they were doing. You know, they were bunching four wide receivers and trying to split them out to one side and all this stuff. I mean, it was a fun game to watch from Alabama perspective. And I'll tell you what, the best part for me was finally getting to see some of those backups, seeing Jacob Coker throw another touchdown, because looking forward, he's going to have to play at some point. Hopefully it's not this year, but next year you're looking forward, and he needs some in-game experience somehow. And at this point last year, Blake Sims had entered the game multiple times for Alabama, but you know, this year there just hasn't been hardly any games other than the Florida game that any of these guys got to come in. And you know, just talking about some guys, you know, Ryan Anderson, Reggie Ragland, Reuben Foster had some big hits this week. Those, you know, linebackers and especially the secondary that seemed to be Alabama's weakness earlier in the season. I mean, Reggie Ragland is playing like a C.J. Mosley type guy. I mean, I don't know if he's there yet, but I mean, he's playing like a tried and true Alabama linebacker when in the first week, you know, we were seeing him having to sit out some of the play, you know, some plays against West Virginia because his pass protect or his pass, you know, defense wasn't there. And no, he's becoming a complete player as the season goes on. And it's fun to watch from an Alabama perspective, but only two games removed from that Ole Miss game when the season, you know, hopefully, you know,
was in jeopardy.
Creep in our mind, but it did, that it was almost lost, you know. And now Alabama's back in the top five, and the playoff picture looks extremely crazy. The SEC West looks extremely crazy, but, you know, anything can happen at this point. And Alabama's sitting pretty.
So. Two things real quick, and I'll get Burton on the Britton on this. Nick, you mentioned West Virginia, and, you know, 3 weeks ago they were talking about, you know, well, they beat West Virginia. It wasn't necessarily a quality win. You know, XM Channel 91, those guys, I'm thinking it's Brando. I don't want to lay blame to one of them that it wasn't. But, you know, they weren't given a lot of credit to that West Virginia win. And this Saturday makes that win look that much better to Alabama to get things started. And also, correct me if I'm wrong, but when Coker went out there, he had the first team offensive line out there. So it wasn't like a whole batch of second stringers were coming into play. He got to play with the first team for a couple series, did he not?
Right. And if in the way that Alabama's been playing lately, if it wasn't the entire first team, you know, Leon Brown rotated over from left or from right guard to left guard. So it was two or three starters that were still in the game for him, including Bradley Bozeman, who's, you know, having been playing center the last couple weeks. And to hit on that West Virginia game, I mean, I think the 41-27 win over Baylor this week was a little inflated because Baylor had like 200 and something yards of penalties. But at the same time, it shows just how explosive West Virginia's offense is. And not to make excuses for Alabama, but that wide receiver that they have out wide, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, he's got a shot to be an All-American and probably a first-round draft pick. He's just playing his way into it. And Trickett, I mean, you know, he looks like, you know, just a great player out there. So
you say all that, you say all that, but in the records, it was the number four team in the country.
Exactly.
Britton, what do you got?
Well, I'm glad that I wasn't able to come on last week because I was pretty down in the dumps about Alabama after that Arkansas game.
So much so that you sent me a 2,000-word email describing your hatred for the Alabama program.
Not hatred, just pointing out flaws. There was no hatred.
No hatred, okay.
But I just was – it was – I mean, Nick touched on it. It was shocking to see an Alabama team with the athletes that we know they have, the coaching staff that we know they have that's proven themselves time and time again, be that inept. And lost is a really good way to describe it. Just terrible against Arkansas. And so I really thought with A&M coming in with the kind of offense they had, with not knowing what we had going offensively and seeing the way we've struggled against some of the passing attacks this year, I really thought A&M had a chance to win this game. And to see the way that they played, I mean, it was flawless. All the mistakes that have been plaguing Alabama all season were completely gone. I think the most exciting part, other than the lack of penalties, was seeing the guys kind of cut loose and be excited to play football again. And it seemed like it kind of started with a couple of the big plays that, in that Arkansas game, the blocked extra point, the Landon Collins interception, where the guys quit being robots and quit being so concerned about doing everything exactly right and all the pressure that comes along with Alabama, especially Alabama in the last 5 years, where a loss or even a poor performance is just the end of the college football world as we know it. They seem like they finally just cut loose and played football, and they were jumping around. They were celebrating with each other, you know, being college football players. And you didn't see much of that last year, and you definitely haven't seen it this year. And if they're able to play loose like that, I think we saw a glimpse into what can happen for the rest of the season. And then the other big takeaway is the defense has improved every single game. Part of it is guys like Reggie Ragland playing way better than I think anyone really thought they were capable of. Part of it is they have eight deep, if not more, on the front four, and they can get pressure with that front four. And that defense is rounding into form and looking real nasty. So lots to be excited about for Alabama fans.
All right, we'll flip over to the East real quick and touch on the South Carolina game. I don't know a lot that you can get from South Carolina playing Furman, other than, you know, it was nice to see them score a bunch of points, get some things corrected. Hopefully you'll see a little bit better performance from South Carolina, especially coming off the bye week last week. But, you know, it's having these teams show up in the middle of a season like this in week eight, it's really hard to gauge what you learn from a team. I don't think you can learn anything from a team when they have these. It's just kind of a breather type of game. You hope you're in the middle of a gauntlet and fighting for something, and South Carolina, unfortunately, I don't think is doing that anymore after three losses in the SEC. But, you know, it's nice for them to be able to come in and get a win, good margin of victory, you know, kept them in check as far as points scored. Anything else that we can add to that?
Yeah, I think the only thing you learn from these kinds of games is if a team like a South Carolina, the dominant team in the matchup, you know, struggles, squeaks by, that's the only time you really learn anything, and you learn that the team is not very good is what you learn. But when, you know, you should beat an inferior team with far inferior talent by a lot, and that, you know, the only time you really learn is if they struggle and you see, man, this team really does have big time weaknesses.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about a team that's got big time weaknesses, and that's the offensive side of the ball for the Florida Gators.
Wow. It's remarkable, is it not?
I mean, dead man walking.
Yeah, I guess, you know, last year we started talking about, or actually, Shane, you were the one that started talking about it. I wasn't really buying into it. I thought you were crazy. It turns out you were right. You started talking about, does Muschamp even make it through the season? And that was a little premature, obviously, last year, because he did make it through. But this year, I mean, it's a legitimate question. It almost seems like the answer's too easy. Is he going to make it through the season at this point?
This is the perfect, you know, listening to everybody today, it makes so much sense. This week is the perfect week, if they were going to let him go, to have that conversation. It's the bye week. It gives the players an extra week to adjust to whatever the new person is, or the interim person that's going to be there to run the show. That decision wasn't made. You know, I think what that really says is that Florida doesn't know they know who they would like to get. Everybody thinks they'd like to get Mullen, and they kind of got to wait till the very, very, very end of the season to be able to talk to him if that's the situation. And so what good does it do to fire him right now? I mean, at least defensively, they won that game. I mean, you look at what they held. You look what they held Matty Mock to, and total yards. I don't have the stats in front of me. It was ridiculous what they did offensively. Missouri, they weren't able to do anything. But your offense from Florida side allows them to score 35 points or something like that. A kick return, a punt return, a fumble recovery, and an interception, all for touchdowns. You know, you can't win a game with those kind of mistakes on the offensive side of the ball. And for as talented as Driscoll is, I feel sorry for the kid. You know, I mean, after they took him out, and Harris, did y'all get to see when they took Driscoll out? They put Harris in, he marches them down. scores a touchdown. Just he throws up basically a wing and a prayer, and it lands right into Florida wide receiver's hands between three or four defenders. And the you know, he just had the Driscoll just had this smirk on his face, and it's just like, oh my God, all this that's gone wrong for me, and this cat does just throws this up and gets a touchdown. I mean, that was the look. It's like nothing could go right for him, and Harris came in and got that touchdown on a pass that should have been another interception. I mean, that's the kind of game and season Driscoll's had, and I feel sorry for him because he's a very talented person. I don't like Florida, but I've got nothing against him as a person or a talent side, but it's just ridiculous to see what they've done on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they've got to be just embarrassed on what they were able to put out there Saturday.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm just looking at the stats here. I mean, 28.7 points a game, and you know, look at the schedule. I think they scored, like, 60-plus points in their first game. So, obviously, that stat's flawed. You know, yards per game, 390. But
well, and a triple overtime with Kentucky helped inflate that, too.
Exactly. But you look at this, and the highest that they're ranked is 134th in the nation for rush yards per game. And all of their rest of their offensive stats range from there to 195th for pass yards per game. When was the last time you saw a Florida team that was just that atrocious on offense? And I think that's the story of the year. I mean, Driscoll's, you know, just not getting it done when you have to turn to a guy like Harris to even, you know, score a touchdown. And like you said, Shane, it was kind of a, not a fluke, but it was just, you know, just kind of a gimme, you know, touchdown. And I think you're right. To say that there's no, if you're a Florida fan, and I mean, we've been through this at Alabama, you know, you feel like, you know, there, what's the harm in firing a guy and just promoting somebody else for the rest of the season? But at the same time, it's Muschamp's team. I can see him, you know, letting him ride it out till the end of the year. But like you said, I mean, pretty much, it's not really like college basketball in the fact that, you know, some people might not be playing in the postseason. A lot of these guys that they're going to want, especially for a Florida job, they're going to be playing in a bowl game, if not maybe even the, you know, the playoff, if you talk about Dan Mullen or some of these other guys, maybe top assistants that they want. So it's going to be a long time until you can even talk to a a guy, much less even get your recruiting going. So really, if you look at Florida's program right now, everything is just kind of in like this waiting period. You know, I mean, the season, I mean, I guess they might be able to win three more games and get to a bowl. But
that's where I was going to go, Nick, as I was looking at the schedule. Britton, you were asking, you know, why would they keep him? That's also another reason. And it's not because he's going to be held on for next year because they make a bowl game. But look at their remaining, you know, schedule. They're off this week. They've got the cocktail party with Georgia. Probably going to be a loss there. But then they have Vanderbilt, a very winnable game. They have South Carolina. Who knows what we have with that program right now. So I'm going to say that can be a winnable game the way that program is. Because Florida beat Kentucky. Well, Kentucky beat South Carolina, so Florida can beat South Carolina. You know, you can play that logic game. Then they have Eastern Kentucky. So there's three games sandwiched in between Georgia and Florida State that they can win. If they get to that sixth win, and even if it is the Beef O'Brady's bowl game or whatever it's called now, or BBVA Compass or, you know, one of the lower-end bowl games, it's still 15 more practices.
Yep.
And that's a huge deal because they need the practice.
And
unlike Allen Iverson, Florida needs to practice.
But how crazy is this going to be if you look at this? I mean, that South Carolina game could very well, you know, be a play-in game to a bowl game if you kind of assume that they're probably going to lose to Georgia and Florida State. What kind of atmosphere is that going to be with the old ball coach, you know, coaching against, you know, just a dying in front of us Muschamp, you know, trying to save the season and get to a bowl game? Obviously, I think he's gone no matter what, unless he, you know, pulls off some miraculous. I don't know. He might have to win out to even keep his job at this point. But,
and it's at the Swamp.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. If you're looking for storylines, that's a pretty good one in my opinion. But at the same time, it's a weird situation for Florida.
Yeah. You know, we talked at the beginning of the season. What was that first game that got rained out? Was it Idaho or Eastern Michigan?
I think it was
Idaho.
Idaho. I mean, we kind of joked, you know, wouldn't it be hilarious if Florida's 5-5 and they have to beat Florida State or, you know, to get to that sixth win because they wound up not replaying this Idaho game. And if we're counting on them to beat South Carolina to be bowl eligible, I don't know that I can put my money on that. I mean, I know South Carolina's struggling, but I've seen nothing from this Florida team to suggest that they are capable of beating a slightly competent team.
Boy,
I mean,
that's
they beat
an excellent
Tennessee,
point.
Who's even more incompetent. You know, if we're banking on beating South Carolina to go bowling, whew, 5-6 is a real possibility. And then Muschamp's fired either way. Y'all both said it. But 6-6 with those bowl practices versus 5-6. I mean, do you think Jeremy Foley's like scrambling to see who he can throw on the schedule in one of these bye weeks? Let's see. Let's call, you know.
Hey, the SEC championship game's going on the first Saturday in December. Idaho, do you want to try to reschedule your matchup with us that week by chance?
We won't be playing in that game, so
we can throw you a little extra money your way. I mean, we can make it worth your while.
It'd be nice and sunny in Florida. You know, it's probably going to be snowing in Idaho.
Yeah,
so.
You can bring some potatoes. We can storm them out in the sun.
Did y'all see the stat making its way around Twitter after Florida lost? I'm going to butcher it a little bit. I don't remember what the time period was, but we'll just say, I don't know, 10 years. And it was teams that have held the opponent under 120 offensive yards in
twice.
The past 10 years.
I saw that twice.
47-2. 47-2, and both losses are by Muschamp. Wow. Is that not unbelievable? Whew. Man, it's a mess there.
Yeah, I saw that stat. That was incredible.
Yeah.
All right, onward and upward. So, you know, Pruitt's decided that Georgia has a defense.
Yeah, he sure has. That's been really surprising. They have talked about improving week over week. They look like a completely different unit.
It was a little Jekyll and Hyde because we were talking after the Clemson game, the way they went in and made adjustments after at halftime, that second half, they basically shut Clemson down. I mean, the score was zeros, but they made them non-existent. And we talked about it then, what kind of fingerprint he was already placing on this defense. And then they turned around and lost to South Carolina. We're confused at what this Georgia defense is being able to do. But, you know, defensively, that program has just opened the door for them to not skip a beat without Gurdy the last 2 weeks and Chubb to come in and run for 202 yards.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I really thought that they were going to miss Gurley a lot more than they did, even though we make so much of a big deal about, you know, they've got Nick Chubb and they've got all these weapons that they can go with. But I thought with a kind of a first-year quarterback that, you know, Gurley offered just this amazing crutch that, you know, Hudson Mason can lean off of. But at the same time, he's played pretty well. The defense has stepped up immensely, like you've talked about. And I don't know if it's more of a – it's obviously a surprise that they've improved so much, but I don't know if it's more of a surprise to me that they were struggling at the beginning of the season or now that they've arrived, kind of. Because I've always been a huge fan of Pruitt, you know, ever since he was at Hoover High School in Birmingham, and I've talked about multiple times his rise to, you know, fame per se and winning a national championship last year, and then seeing him lose to South Carolina in the way that they did, it was really surprising to me. So I think it's kind of a almost like Alabama was a little bit, you know, like a redemptive thing. Well, you know, this is the Georgia we kind of expected, you know, at the beginning of the year. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, they look like they're going to run away with the East in this week's game. Do they have? Oh, Florida, of course. So, anyway, interesting.
They don't have Florida this week. It's next week.
Are they off this week? They're off this week. Georgia's off this week.
Yes, Georgia and Florida are both off before the cocktail party.
Awesome.
But, you know, if they come in 2 weeks and rough up Florida, you know, that's when you understand where they really are. Because I don't know if they're good enough to beat Auburn on down the schedule.
Yeah, I still don't really trust Hudson Mason. It's been astounding to watch Todd Gurley was a legitimate Heisman contender, and a non-quarterback to be in the conversation for a Heisman right now is kind of rare because it just seems like it's a quarterback award now. But he was that good. I mean, he was legitimately top three or four player in the country, regardless of position. And you lose a guy like that, no matter how good Chubb is, you lose a guy like that and you think it's going to affect him. And it's almost like it's kind of galvanized the team and they've kind of rallied around each other or something. I mean, it's certainly not that they're better without him, but their performance has drastically improved just as an overall team. So it's fascinating to watch. I don't know. The West is just so much better than the East. I don't know if they're able to beat Auburn because Auburn looks like the real deal. But it is in Athens, and, you know, Georgia. To me, Georgia is the kind of team that will beat an Auburn, but then will lose to a Florida or someone they have no business losing to.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. So, I mean, that's going to be interesting. That's the storyline of the East is can Georgia continue this rise to back to where some people, myself included, thought they were going to be the leader in the East. You know, that's. I'm glad to see that they're started to right the ship a little bit. Let's see. Another program that, you know, it kind of warms my heart a little bit that they you know, only put up a field goal, but Kentucky didn't do much better on a scoring standpoint either. But that was Tennessee playing Ole Miss down in the Grove.
Do you guys think that there's another team that's a better candidate for there to be an extremely divisive split between the two sides of the ball? I mean, the Tennessee defense is playing ball to the point where they can win some games.
And Florida.
For instance. I mean, if Georgia, for instance.
Well, Florida would have won that game if their offense would have just not had turnovers.
Tennessee would have won, you mean?
No, you said, is there another team? Florida.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because if Florida's offense would have just not made mistakes and turned the ball over, Florida would have won that game. It would have been 13-7.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So, but yeah, no, it is the tale of two sides, though. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, their defense is playing well enough to win pretty much every game that they've been in so far, and their offense, and it's not even – the whole offense. It's the five offensive linemen. And, you know, this is another thing we were right about, Shane. We talked about it before the season. We knew it was going to be a problem. You don't bring five brand new starters, several of which are underclassmen, into a season and expect to be very good up front. But it's amazing to watch over and over again, every single week, how they have a quarterback who's playing really well. They have some outstanding skill on the outside. They have a really good young running back, but their O-line just gets whipped over and over and over, and it doesn't matter how well their defense plays because they can't block anyone to have a successful offensive play. And this game, it happened again. I mean, it's 3-0 with like 5 minutes to go in the second quarter, and you're thinking, okay, Tennessee, maybe they're going to kind of pull a rabbit out of their hat. Maybe Ole Miss is finally down after two huge performances. But slowly but surely, they just crumbled, and the Ole Miss defense took over and turns them over and sacks Worley and all this. It's I mean, the defense has just got to be like, come on, guys, block somebody.
Yeah, you know, much like we saw with Alabama, I hate to keep comparing things to Alabama. That's the team I watch the most. But, you know, we saw against Arkansas, that was where the real struggle is. And, you know, Nick Saban kind of said it begins and ends with the offensive line. And you can't, you know, dominate in the run game. You can't, you know, even make some good passes, even if your receivers are open. If you can't, you know, get that extra second or two of decision-making to make your reads, Justin Worley's not going to be able to do anything. And I think y'all are exactly right. They've got some skill guys on the outside. They've got a great young running back. Defense is playing pretty well, but like we said at the beginning of the year, you know, not to toot our own horn, but that front, you know, that the front offensive linemen, I mean, they're just too young right now, and it's proving time and time again that, you know, even not being able to pull off a win against Florida, but, you know, once they get up against these top-tier defenses like, I mean, not even Oklahoma has a great defense, but, I mean, they only put up 10 points in that game. You know, you look at really, the Georgia game is the only game that they've scored, you know, hand-in-hand with their opponent in a big game. But that's what kind of worries me for the rest of the season with Tennessee. And we, I mean, at one point this year, and we talk about a tale of two sides, I thought Tennessee was going to be able to pull off some of these games, and, you know, not to write them off, they may still be able to, but I mean, if you can't score in these games, even if you hold a team to, you know, like Britton said, even like an Ole Miss team, Bo Wallace been playing so well, the skill guys that they have, hold them to, you know, no points in the first half or no points in the first quarter, you know, keep it close to the, you know, halftime. They ended up running away with it simply because Tennessee couldn't match them. So that's going to be a problem going forward.
All right, let me ask you, you say, can they turn it around? They've got five games left. They have to win three of those to be bowl eligible. Tell me if there's a, if there's three wins on this schedule. Alabama, at South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, Vanderbilt.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with the East. I think there are wins there. First of all, Vanderbilt, that's a win. Vanderbilt is just an atrocious football team. They don't even need to step on the field right now. So I'm giving them that win. And as bad as they've been and as much as
and you're
going to
give
trust
them the Alabama loss, right?
Yes.
So there's three in question. So they got to get two wins out of these three games at South Carolina, Kentucky, and Missouri.
And I think they can win. They have the ability to win all three of those games. I don't know that they will win three of those games. But, you know, I, as unconfident as I am about Tennessee, I'm equally as unconfident about every one of those other teams. I was feeling better about Kentucky until this past weekend. I think they could certainly win three out of those five.
But at the same time, other than the Alabama game, or sorry, other than the Vandy game, you know,
they could lose them all too.
They could all lose them. Just sitting there thinking about, so
yeah,
because if Missouri plays the way they did against two or three other teams, what, Georgia, South Carolina, they play both of those well.
No, they got killed by Georgia.
Oh, I mean, it was South Carolina they played really tough.
Really, South Carolina's the only team that they've played well. I mean, they played terrible against Florida, and they still won. They lost to Indiana. They got killed by Georgia.
No, you're right. You're right. I'm looking at the
Matty
schedule.
Mock has completely regressed.
So if they could show up like they did at South Carolina, there's a chance.
Yeah. Well, and even in that one, I mean, they didn't really show up until midway through the fourth quarter, and South Carolina just kind of collapsed. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch.
It's not going to be an easy three wins. They're going
no,
to have,
absolutely not.
They're going to have to scrape and claw if that's the case.
And with the way things have gone for Tennessee recently, I mean, I gave them the Vanderbilt loss because Vanderbilt is atrocious. But, you know, the way things have broken for them lately, that could wind up being a really tough game, as bad as Vanderbilt has been.
Could you imagine going into that game 5-6?
And then losing, that would
and
be
having to win that game here in Nashville to be bowl eligible.
How quickly would everybody be off the Butch Jones bandwagon if they were to lose that in a situation like that?
Mm. Well, you talked about Kentucky and how you are unsure of. I'm a little disappointed in their offensive performance, but let me say this: LSU's defense has grown up over the last 3 weeks. They are in a form and in a way of playing that we were hoping to see from the very beginning when we were looking at LSU and the way we thought about them. Kentucky, for everything they've done well, the one thing I said last week was they can't stop the run. And guess
and
what?
You saw that.
LSU ran the ball and they couldn't stop. And they couldn't stop the big play. You know, I mean, they did a good job on Fournette for the most part, but McGee just blasted them. And then, you know, every time you think you'd have them third and long, they would be playing basically a prevent, and they'd get behind them and just get huge plays. And so it was never these, you know, consistent things with that Kentucky game against LSU. It was big play losses. It was letting LSU run basically whenever they wanted to with McGee for the first down and more. And that was their Achilles heel. And I said that's what they had to do and that's what they had to stop was the run. They just couldn't do it. I don't think – and you say that about Tennessee. I don't think Tennessee has that kind – Hurd's a great runner, but I don't think it's near the caliber that LSU is going to be able to play. You know, LSU can put three or four backs out there. You've always got a fresh set of legs. Tennessee doesn't have that. You got the one horse. And you know, so you're not going to expect him to be able to run the ball 40 times. So you've got that advantage if you're Kentucky looking ahead. I don't want to look too far ahead at that game because Kentucky's got some tough stuff ahead of them as well. But, you know, that's the difference in a Kentucky game or Kentucky going up against Tennessee versus LSU.
Well, and LSU also has what we thought was going to be a really strong offensive line, whereas we knew Tennessee wasn't going to have that. And I don't know that, you know, their struggles in just offensively in general, they haven't been great at running the ball until the last couple of weeks, talking about LSU now. But I think a lot of that has to do with their lack of quarterback play. And against Kentucky, it didn't seem to matter that Kentucky wasn't respecting the pass or wasn't concerned about getting thrown over the top. LSU was just able to run it down their throats. And, you know, I mean, that's what Les Miles wants to do. He wants to line up in I formation, pound you with four tailbacks for 50 carries, and then hit a few big pass plays when you're not expecting it. And if they're playing defense like they look like they have started to play and they're able to, you know, impose their will on the running game, then they're going to be able to beat teams. I still think against the better teams, they have to have more of a passing game than they've shown so far. But against, you know, some of the teams from the East and a team like Arkansas maybe and probably Texas A&M, they're strong enough and they're good enough defensively the way they played the last 2 weeks.
And gosh darn it, people like them. Nick, that might be way past you. You might not even know that. Stuart Smiley's Daily Affirmations?
Yeah.
No? Saturday Night Live?
No idea what you're talking about.
Nope, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me. People really like me.
But, Bryn, you're right. I mean, Anthony Jennings throwing, you know, 7 for 14, 120 yards, obviously didn't have an interception, but only one touchdown. I mean, that's probably not going to get it done against some of the top, you know, SEC West teams. But, I mean, you look at it, LSU's running game really arrived in this game. I mean, you've got McGee with, you know, 127 yards on 9 carries, and, you know, kind of surprising that Fournette got so many carries with only 40 yards, but
they did a great job. They did a great job just stopping him. He did not let them beat him. It was McGee. He was the dagger.
And that's been the surprising thing to me. I mean, not to pick on Fournette or anything. I mean, he is a freshman, but you know, people were talking him up like he was going to be like the next big thing. And so far, I mean, he really hasn't. I mean, you can see that he has skill. But at the same time, I don't know if it's, you know, LSU's blocking schemes or what. But like you're saying, every single game, I feel like he's held to under 50 yards and somebody else steps up and, you know, maybe reaches that 100-yard mark. But, I mean, whatever gets it done. Like Britton said, you know, LSU's got four or five guys deep in the backfield, and they don't really care who gets the carries or who gets it. As long as they keep producing, and if that defense holds, they're going to win some games.
So let's take a look at some of these matchups. Here's a really good one, slated. It's a 12 o'clock Eastern kickoff. That's UAB at Arkansas. I think lots of eyeballs are going to be on that game.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. So we're not even going to talk about that one. Here's where we find out what LSU has been able to put together over the last 2 weeks. Are they going to?
Absolutely.
You know, it is. In Death Valley. Have they not announced the times yet?
Yeah, they have. Actually, before you jump into all these previews, I was going to say I'm really pissed at the schedule maker because the times are UAB Arkansas at noon or at 11, whatever, and then Mississippi State at Kentucky is 2:30, Vanderbilt, Missouri is at 3, and then all three of the other games start at 7:15 or 7:30. Ole Miss, LSU, South Carolina, Auburn, and Alabama, Tennessee are all 7:15, 7:30, 7:30. That's terrible. What in the world? What are we supposed to do the rest of the day, and then how are we going to watch all three games at once? This is awful. So anyway, continue, Shane.
Now, well, the CBS game was announced last week, that start time. I'm guessing CBS was hoping that that LSU would have been beaten by Kentucky so that you had two ranked programs up at Lexington.
Yeah, because Ole Miss LSU is clearly the marquee game for this week.
Yeah, I mean,
so it's weird that CBS missed out on that.
So I mean, for most people, unless you're a Mississippi State or Kentucky fan, you got all day to go do whatever you need to do, because the other game, the other afternoon game's Vanderbilt at Missouri, and we've already talked about Vanderbilt's woes. I'm not going to go into those again, and. You know, Missouri, you know, this is a game that they have to right their ship. They've been embarrassed once before already in Columbia. So they're going to have to find a way to get that done. I don't see it any problem. South Carolina, as much as, you know, that Furman game is a morale booster for them, they're still going on the plains to play Auburn. I think that's a loss when it's all said and done. I don't think it's going to be, unfortunately for Spurrier, a good trip to Alabama. Alabama, speaking of the state of Alabama, the Crimson Tide get to go to Tennessee. We already talked about that program, Tennessee, and if Alabama does 80% of what they did, it's going to be another bloodbath in Neyland Stadium, and Tennessee fans will not be happy with that. No matter, I don't care how much of a rebuilding program they are. If Alabama destroys them, they're gonna be there's gonna be more bags over people's heads with crying orange tears. I don't know if you saw one of those pictures on Twitter or not.
There no, was, I didn't see
there
that.
Was a lady with her bag over her head with a UT on it, and it just had orange tears coming down her where her eyes would be.
Yeah, there have been a couple of pretty big blowouts in Neyland over the past couple of years, so they're you're right. No matter how down they are, that's just not something that you can handle. I will say about that game, though, if I guess we'll go ahead and preview that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's been nothing else to preview on these other games so far. Ole Miss, okay. LSU, but we got off on that tangent, so we can get back to them.
Okay. Yeah, we can finish with a bang with the best game. I will say that Alabama has a little bit of split personality going on this year. It seems to be a home and away thing, at least so far. Specifically with offensive performance. They actually touched on a little bit in the A&M game about Kiffin told Gary Danielson that he's able to communicate with Blake a lot better, with Blake Sims a lot better when they're at home. I don't completely understand that because you have hand signals and whatnot. I guess, I mean, he is actually able to verbally, you know, audibly communicate with Sims. He can whistle at him and actually yell at him and not just rely on hand signals at home, whereas probably can't do that on the road with crowd noise. I don't completely understand it, but I'm still as excited as I am, as all Alabama fans have to be, about what we saw against Texas A&M coming out of the funk of the last two games. You know, until I see them put a performance like that, not to that extent. That was ridiculous. You know, that's one of those once in 5 years types of performances, but a good performance on the road. I'm still going to be a little bit wait and see, specifically with road games with this team. I think that we saw that Arkansas, even though they're better, they're not quite ready to play an Alabama team to a 14-13 game. And so is it just that the offense is not capable of executing as well on the road? It's going to be a hostile environment, maybe only for a half if Alabama gets up big, but it's going to be hostile. You know they're going to be pissed off about Lane Kiffin coming in. So I'm not saying that it's going to be a loss or maybe even a close game, but I'm definitely still in wait-and-see mode with these road games for Alabama.
Yeah, Britton, that's a really good point. And, you know, looking at the line, 17.5 right now, I think that's pretty good. You know, I mean, that's kind of what you described. You know, it's probably going to be a game that seems pretty close to start out, but Alabama may pull away. One of the things I'm going to look for is kind of like what you touched on, is consistency. You know, I mean, I understand the play calling aspect, and I understand that, you know, when you have to audible, there's going to be some things that gets mixed up, especially if Blake's having to look over at Lane every single time. But there were just some inexcusable things that Alabama did. I mean, starting with the offensive line, I mean, I know that, you know, different schemes. I mean, if you get the play mixed up, obviously the offensive line's going to look bad, but Alabama just could not run the ball at all against Arkansas. And I'm not ready to give Arkansas that much credit on being able to limit Alabama. Obviously, they did a good job in the game, but I think part of it was Alabama's fault. But at the same time, too, you know, all of this stuff that has gone on in the last 2 weeks with Alabama and Nick Saban making it an emphasis to quote unquote, let the horses run, as he said, just let the players play. Even if Alabama doesn't perform nearly as well, or, you know, not come out and pitch a complete shutout, or, you know, not make any mistakes, I want to see more of this character that Alabama's building. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw on the CBS thing, I was there live, but, you know, just the guys jumping up and down on the sidelines during jump around. I mean, that's something, you know, Mississippi State does, but that's something I've never seen with an Alabama team, and it's fun to watch. You know, that Texas A&M game, even if it would have been close, I think the way that the players were playing was just so fun for me to watch, and I want to see guys like Landon Collins and Reuben Foster and all those guys, you know, lead the defense and continue, even if Alabama can't score, you know, 50 points, even if they're only held to, you know, 20 or 30 points, that we can bring that defensive intensity and, you know, bring that brand of football that we saw last week instead of the week before.
You know, as a non-Alabama fan, someone on the outside looking in, and it could be my bias against Tennessee that makes me feel this way. So I will preface this conversation with that. But having that huge win, it's not a matter of them letting down all of a sudden. Now it's a matter of realizing that they can do it. And Alabama, to me, so far this season, really hasn't been able to show themselves that they have the talent to compete for a national championship until they did that against Kevin Sumlin's program. Because whether we want to sit here and take credit for realizing that Texas A&M wasn't as good as some people thought they were at the beginning of the season or not, all of that aside, they still have some playmakers on the offense. They still have the ability to score quickly. Alabama was able to take all those things away from them and then do things correctly in the way they wanted to do on both sides of the ball. So they've been able to instill themselves the mindset that, yeah, this is doable. So for Tennessee, I would be scared and worried that that's going to continue to happen. One other thing, and I'm going to go away from this game to go back to the Arkansas game. As much as they've been beat down, We've all talked about they've got a really good chance of sneaking up on somebody. UAB could not have come at a better time for them, because if they would have had another SEC opponent and lost another SEC matchup this week, who knows what could happen with that Arkansas program. But to be able to basically catch your breath and get a win could be really good for Arkansas going forward the rest of the season. A good way to restart and reset themselves. So, I just
that's a good point. That's a good point, because, you know, they have Mississippi State next week. So, imagine if they come off of three straight losses, two of which were just gut wrenching, and then you go and you're going to the number one team in the country. So, this is a good chance for Arkansas to maybe gain a little bit more confidence.
They could lose it all next week, but, you know, at least that gives them that fighting chance back, because I would think that they would be very, very – it would be a very, very tough week of game practice if they had another SEC opponent this Saturday.
Yeah, I totally agree. It'd be hard to get yourself up for it.
And now you mentioned Mississippi State, the number one team in the country for 2 weeks in a row, you know. It was nice.
How weird does it sound to say that?
It was nice to see them not get punished for Florida State winning against Notre Dame and Mississippi State being on a bye. Because I know Florida State lost their number one position. You know, they didn't lose, so it was nice to see that the voters realized that Mississippi State's probably a little bit better program than Florida State. Mississippi State always plays Kentucky tough. They play them tough at Commonwealth. As much as I would love to see Kentucky pull this upset, I can't buy into that. I think they're going to do a little bit better from a performance standpoint against Mississippi State than they did against LSU. They've got a chance, if you talk about Kentucky, to go back and look at some tape and realize that, you know, they were getting a lot of praise and a lot of things being said about that Kentucky program. You know, people were throwing out, well, they could contend for the East. And I personally wasn't able to go out on that far of a limb and say something like that, because I was saying before this LSU game that you're looking at a Kentucky program that won two games last year, playing a preseason, was it top five? LSU, weren't they preseason top five? I know they were top 10.
I don't think they were top five.
Okay, top 10? I think, top 10 in some,
yeah.
Some polls, top 10?
Top 12, maybe.
So you're looking at an LSU program like that and a Kentucky program that won two wins. Do you honestly think that there's that big of a disparity and Kentucky was going to be able to be competitive? I didn't think that. I couldn't buy into that. Just like I can't buy into the fact that Kentucky can beat Mississippi State. Anything is possible in the SEC. We've seen that year in and year out. So I can't tell you that they can't beat them. But just like with the LSU game last week, I said until Kentucky can prove to me that they can beat them, I can't go against them and say that they can win. So, and I've got to go with that. As much as I want to see Kentucky win and as much as we're wearing the blue and white this week, I don't think they have a chance to get that against that Mississippi defense and Dak Prescott at offense and all those weapons they have on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, if Kentucky had a better showing, not necessarily won against LSU, but made it a ball game, I would have maybe felt a little bit better about, you know, maybe Kentucky can come and can win this game. But after the way they looked, and, you know, we mentioned that they can't stop the run. Well, brother, you're going to have a really good running back and a big old quarterback running right down your throat all game. The other thing is, you know, this maybe feels like a trap game type of situation for Mississippi State because you're on the road, you're at a Kentucky team that maybe you overlook. But when you look at some of the other factors that usually lead into a trap game, really none of those factors are there. I mean, Mississippi State's coming off a bye, so they've been resting, thinking about, okay, let's get our minds right. We're really in this thing. We got to take care of business. They play Arkansas the week after, so it's not like they have this giant look-ahead game where they're going to overlook Kentucky thinking about a top-five opponent they have coming in. There's really nothing about it that says to me that Kentucky is going to be able to compete. I think Mississippi State is going to handle their business and going to probably win by multiple touchdowns and just keep right on rolling.
And Brent, I'll agree. One of the things I'm going to look for is, you know, not to demean Kentucky or anything, but with Mississippi State, no knock on them, but never being in this position before. I mean, as Alabama has learned and Florida State has learned, you know, you can drop even without losing a game. And it's very, I mean, as long as you win the game, it doesn't, you know, it's not that important, especially now that we have the playoff. But I think in the national media's eyes, for storylines, at least, you know, they want to see Kentucky, you know, or sorry, Mississippi State win this by, you know, a comfortable margin, and they want to see Dak Prescott, you know, continue what he's doing and that defense continue to be dominant. So, Britton, just for me, I mean, it'll be interesting for me to see how and, you know, to what effect MSU takes care of business. You know, is it going to be kind of like a business trip, for instance, and they don't get caught up in, you know, Kentucky, this is kind of a lesser game, even though, you know, Kentucky's sitting, you know, at 5-2. But I don't know. I mean, every single game for MSU at this point is kind of uncharted territory, so it's still fun to watch. And another game that we can watch Dak Prescott show out is, you know, great for me.
I'll say that one thing, Nick. I think even if it's close, I don't think Mississippi State gets punished because people still think, I mean, if you listen to the media talk, even with the LSU game last week, everybody thinks that the Kentucky program is still a good program. It's not like that if this was a close game with Vanderbilt, you know, then all of a sudden we've got something to worry about. But it's another program that people are still saying is a good program. When you lose to a good team, even if you lose close, you don't get lambasted like you do with your Alabama losing or barely winning against Arkansas, who still hasn't won a game in the SEC in the last 2 years. You know, it's those kind of things that are out there that gets put out there. Even though Arkansas is a better program than they were at the beginning of the season or even last year, and they still haven't won an SEC game in almost 2 years, that's a big monkey on their shoulder, and Alabama can get punished for scraping by, whereas Mississippi State can scrape by at Kentucky, and it wouldn't look quite as bad.
That's a good point.
Last game is the marquee game, as Britton said, Ole Miss headed to Death Valley. They only did that because LSU only plays at night. That's why they get the 7:30 kickoff, Britton.
Are we going to do South Carolina Auburn?
I thought we talked about that one. I just don't like to talk about Auburn, apparently, because was it 2 weeks ago we forgot to talk about Auburn?
Yeah.
I think we talk. I've glanced over that one with South Carolina going to. Yeah, I said that South Carolina's headed to the plains, and I just don't see South Carolina having a chance.
Yeah, I don't really either. That may be all we have to say.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll say that it's disappointing as a football fan, because we looked at this game, you know, in the season previews and thought this is going to be an epic game, potentially the first place team in the East against the first place team in the West, and just to have it not materialize is pretty disappointing. I don't really see any way that South Carolina wins this game, but
the only way is Steve Spurrier loves playing the underdog.
Yeah, he does, and he's a great coach, and he's got tricks up his sleeve, so maybe he pulls one out. But I think if he's going to pull a rabbit out of his hat, I don't know if beating Florida right now is pulling a rabbit out of your hat, but if he's got a little surprise for everybody, it's going to be stomping Florida in the swamp to end their bowl hopes while Muschamp gets carried out on a...
Yeah, but from South Carolina's standpoint, I mean, they're still... I mean, mathematically, they're not eliminated from the East. It's going to be very, very difficult for them to win the East. But if they get a win against Auburn and have a really, really good second half, you're talking potentially getting into the top 10. And all of a sudden, there you've got a really good quality bowl game for them. So, you know, there's those type of things that could happen and transpire from this game. Just like with Kentucky, I can't sit there and tell you South Carolina can beat Auburn until they go do it. All right, can we go to Ole Miss, LSU, or is there anything, Nick, you want to add to that?
No, I think that's about it. I mean, one thing for me is that's been surprising for Auburn is obviously Trey Mason isn't there, and they've lost some talent on the offensive line, but their running game, they've become a different team this year. And that downhill running game, I mean, it was incredible to watch last year. And I think it's reasonable to watch them take a step back this year. But I think that might hurt them in the long run. I mean, they ran up against a tough, you know, Mississippi State team. But I don't think South Carolina has the defense to limit them. But, you know, I don't know. That's one thing for me to watch is if they can establish a better run game against a lesser opponent like South Carolina.
Yeah, that's true, because that run game from last year where they're just, you know, they're able to get 7-8 yards on that dive play on first down over again is what they did all year last year. They've been able to do that against the teams that are not as good. It's been, you know, the Mississippi States of the world, the Kansas State, who's turning out to be a really good football team, where they haven't been able to do that. And then you turn Nick Marshall into more of a normal quarterback who has to beat you from the pocket on expected pass downs, and you know he's just not going to consistently beat you that way. But when they can gash you with the dive, and then you have to respect everything in Malzahn's playbook on second and three, that's when they're scary. So if South Carolina is stout enough to prevent that, then Auburn's beatable. But I don't think South Carolina is stout enough to make that happen. I think you're looking at Ole Miss and Alabama as the only teams left on and Georgia as the only teams left on the schedule that are able to turn Marshall into more of a passer.
Yep. All right, keep talking, Britton. Tell me, does Ole Miss take care of business in Death Valley?
Well, I have to eat a little crow. We've talked about some of the things we've been right on, and I've got to talk about what I was wrong on. I don't think I was able to be on after Ole Miss beat A&M. I thought Ole Miss, the way that they won against Alabama, it was more about Alabama not being as good this year, and that they were, you know, they admitted that they'd been watching film for 4 weeks, that I felt like that was their Super Bowl. They were in for a letdown, and then they go and crush A&M. Then after A&M, I somehow convinced myself, even with as terrible as Tennessee is, you know, maybe now is the letdown. I keep telling myself that here comes the letdown, and Ole Miss is going to either struggle or outright lose. And it has not happened. And that defense is legit. and they're not even having to win with great offensive play. Bo Wallace has been very good. The good Bo, bad Bo thing, I listened to y'all last week, Shane, that's kind of been put to bed for the most part. Yep. And it's because, I think it was Steven that said, it's because he knows he can rely on his defense. He does not feel like he's pressuring himself into, I've got to squeeze this ball in there and make a play like he maybe did in the past.
That was a great point he made last week about that. All the pressure's been taken off of him. Because when Bad Bo showed up, he had to put the team on his shoulders to try to win a game.
Right. He's never had a truly dominant defense that he knew he could trust. That's one of the things everybody talks about Alabama game manager quarterbacks. Well, they've all had defenses that if you just don't put them in bad positions, you're going to win a lot of games. And that's what Ole Miss is doing right now. So I keep saying every week, here comes the letdown, here comes the letdown. And I'm not going to say it this week. As I know, I just talked a little bit about how LSU has improved. They're starting to round into form, but I'm still not a believer. We talked about they've got to have better quarterback play against the good teams, and they're coming in to play a good team, specifically a very good defense.
Yeah, this defense can stop the run and the pass.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'll be somewhat successful against the run. Blair talks about it a lot, that the way you can beat that defense is if you can pound them up the middle. So I think they'll have some success there, but you're not going to repeated success like they did against Kentucky, where you just run it down their throats for four quarters.
No.
And I don't think LSU has back play, no matter who's actually taking the snaps, to make enough plays. I think the Ole Miss defense is going to play great. They're going to give them their offense the ball in positions to have short fields and be successful, even if they aren't scoring touchdowns on every drive. They're going to have more chance at quick scores because of short fields. And I think Ole Miss probably wins by 7-10, somewhere in that range.
Nick Jones.
I think you're right. I think it's about a 7-point game. And, you know, this is going to be an interesting game because, I mean, Alabama beat themselves up a little bit against Ole Miss, but this might be the game where Bo Wallace may have to go out there and win it. And like we've talked about, he's played great this year. I think he surprised us all. You know, Bad Bo hasn't showed up yet, but even though that
he has, it just hasn't mattered.
That's true. That's true. And the defense is helping him out a lot. So, I don't know. We've talked about how LSU's defense is, you know, drastically improved from that first game. I think on the same token, though, LSU's going to have to move the ball with the pass at some point. And if they're going to beat, like we talked about earlier in the show, if they're going to beat these top-tier SEC West teams, which Ole Miss has already proven that they are, beating Alabama and, you know, taking care of business so far undefeated, you know, LSU's going to have to pass the ball to win. So I just can't see, you know, LSU upsetting them. And it's kind of weird saying LSU upsetting Ole Miss in Death Valley at night. But I just can't see it happening. But I think it will be a close game. And, you know, once again, Ole Miss is going to have the opportunity to say, hey, we're here, we're ready to play, and we deserve to be in the top three, probably, you know, maybe even ahead of Florida State, depending on who you ask. And so I don't know. But line's 3.5. I think, you know, kind of respecting LSU there at night. But I think Britton's right. 7-point game. I could even see it going double digits by the end of the game.
Well, for everybody talking about how, and we talked about it too, you know, how light the schedule is, there's still fun football to watch because, you know, Alabama fans are going to love to see Tennessee get beat up. Kentucky fans are going to love to see Tennessee get beat up. Tennessee fans are going to watch themselves get beat up. You know, LSU Ole Miss is going to take care of the night, getting the whole night. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch the Ole Miss come into Death Valley, see what LSU's defense can do. South Carolina, Auburn, you know, those Tigers are for real. That's a team that I wasn't real high on at the beginning of the season, and they are proven to show me wrong time and time again. And so I said they were going to be good, never expected them to be another, you know, top five team in the country. So, you know, you get to watch all of those. The morning game, we can basically go do some yard work, go catch a soccer game for your kids, whatever you need to do, unless you're just a big suey. I don't think there's much reason to have to watch that game. And then Kentucky, Mississippi State. A lot of folks are going to want to watch Mississippi State try to continue their dominance and have this Cinderella type of run. Because at the end of the year, if both Ole Miss and Mississippi State can keep on the same trajectory, only one of them are going to the Final Four. Is that safe to say?
I don't know. If they make it undefeated, I think last year is the case study. I think a lot of people think that if there was a four-team playoff last year, Alabama would have been the fourth team in, despite that they lost their last regular season game. And that very same scenario could play out. I mean, you're looking at if Ole Miss and Mississippi State both come to the undefeated, they've both beaten Auburn and Alabama, who are top five teams. They've both beaten LSU, who's ranked. They've beaten Texas A&M, who at the time was ranked. It could be, and now it's going to depend on what happens with the rest of the country, but it's tough to keep a one-loss SEC team out, even if that team is from the West and the other team went to the SEC championship, if they have so many quality wins on their resume.
That would be a nice rematch because, you know, they both might end up seeing each other in the finals if that's the case. So yeah. That's why we watch this stuff.
Crazy.
Nick, what were we wanting to say?
I was just saying, I would have to agree. I mean, I think for that to happen, both teams have to come into the Egg Bowl undefeated. And just to think about right now, obviously way too far out to think about that, but what a game that would be. But Britton brings up a great point. I mean, even if Alabama and Auburn's only two losses, well, obviously they'll have a loss to each other, one of them will, but if their only two losses are against, you know, Mississippi State and Ole Miss, I mean, those are two top five wins for both of those teams. And I can't name a year that two of the, I guess, one, two, and three teams have beaten two top five teams in conference play, which is kind of crazy. And I was going to say this earlier, but one of the LSU beat reporters tweeted this out, so not to scare Ole Miss or Alabama fans, but interesting stat. LSU has defeated a top 10 team in Tiger Stadium each of the past four seasons, and right now they've got two top 10 teams remaining on the schedule coming to LSU, Ole Miss, and Alabama. So this might be the week. But
let's make sure it's Ole Miss.
Yeah, let's make sure for our sake, let's make sure it's Ole Miss. So.
Nick, that's a great stat. We'll end it with that, guys. Thanks for being on. Again, we do this every week. Go out there and do subscribes. Do those subscriptions, likes, tweet us out, repost, do whatever you need to do to help get this word out that we've got this podcast every week. And we will see you guys next week because we're going to call this podcast done.